Let's go. Yeah! Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 127. Today is June 24th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. Hey, the revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Hey, very nice, Bruce Coburn. As always, actions speak louder.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Right now we have DJ Shadow. That'll be followed by Ashley McIsaac. What do we have for you today? I've got a poem. It's a groovy, feel-good, new agey, 2012-y. It's called A Spiritual Conspiracy. Yeah. Well, I hope this makes you feel good. You know, so often I'm, talking about some pretty unpleasant things. And, well, let's hope that people like myself are doing this for a hell of a good reason. And this poem will talk a little bit about it, won't it? Okay, I'm going to read a short piece that came from PrisonPlanet.com. The author, Paul Joseph Watson. And it's entitled, Ron Paul Slams Federal Reserve's New Dictatorial Powers. And the reason I'm going to read that is I'm going to be playing a short excerpt from the Alex Jones radio show, taken from June 20th, in which he's talking about the Fed. So I want to put it in context for you. So I'll read a short article, then we'll get into Alex Jones. And he's a very emotional, full of energy. He's quite the spirit, Alex Jones. And, well, I'm quite sure you're going to enjoy his presentation of some really nasty ideas. Yeah. Okay, moving on. I have another audio piece. This comes to us from Edmonton 9/11 Speaker's Corner. And this one here is asking, the specific question is, how have the Canadian corporate media handled the 9/11 question? And, I definitely have some ideas, and I think they did and are doing a rather lousy job. However, this is leading into Jonathan Kay, an author that works for CanWest, their flagship newspaper, the National Post. And he is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, but he's also writing a book on the 9/11 truth movement and, well, for a good part in Canada. And I'm very curious to see, you know, is this guy going to just, I don't know, how do you look at 9/11 for a long time and not acknowledge the problems that I speak of every week? So it's going to be really interesting to see what this book by Jonathan Kay, and, well, I'll be asking him some tough questions. You better believe that. I am not a fan of this CanWest propaganda system that's, well, lying to you and me about the most important things. So well done, Jonathan Kay. He'll be on before too long. Okay, I do have a longer audio clip. This is from my favorite 9/11 researcher, Dr. David Ray Griffin. This lecture is from April 11th, 2009. He was in Boston University, and he's calling this 9/11 Time for a Second Look. It is a longer piece, close to an hour. I'm going to break it up into two half-hour segments. And, well, who is David Ray Griffin? He's my favorite author from the movement. He's, well, kind of the high priest. I guess he's the most prolific. He's averaging more than a book a year for the last 5 years. Heck, almost two books a year, really. But his research skills are impeccable. And he's a huge leader in this movement. And this recent lecture incorporates a lot of the most recent findings from the movement, the research, as well as he ends and lists quite a few positive changes that, you know, 9/11 is making inroads, well, slowly, but here and there they are doing that. Okay, I also have a funny piece I'm going to read. It's a short, it was an email. It's my brother sent it to me, and it's called, You Will Not Believe This, But It's True. Guess which organization this is? And they say, well, is it the NFL? Or is it the NBA? You know, is it, you know, basketball players or football players? And it's talking about, you know, these guys are, well, not very professional in their private lives. And so it's kind of a guessing fun thing with a bit of a twist at the end. So that's a fun piece as well. And if I have time, I have a piece that, here we are, talking about vaccinating Canadians. And they're not saying the word mandatory in this press release, but they're saying it in a lot of other ways. This comes to us from the CanWest News Service. Sharon Kirkley is the author. June 21st is the publishing date on that piece. So there we are. That's what we're going to do today. No interview today. Although I just got confirmation by a woman in... back East Canada, I'm not too sure where she's from. I'll just give her first name, Nikki. And I believe she was a medical student and living in New York City on that terrible September 11, 2001. And she rushed down there to help as a first responder. She showed up and put me to work. I want to save some lives. And right now, like so many of the other brave, heroic people that ran down there to do what they could, they are... Well, many have died, and many are dying. And Nikki is in that terrible predicament, very sick with ailments from, well, big problem with that, the pollution, the airborne pollution due to those buildings being blown up. A lot of nasty things were ingested in people's lungs and skin. And I believe the number is almost as many first responders have died, then died on 9/11. So clearly that is a huge, huge problem. And well done, Nikki, for going to share your story. And I applaud you for doing that, and I'm looking forward to that. We don't have a date set up. We'll call it give or take a month right from now. So, maybe we should just move on to the weather update. That will conclude what we're going to listen to today. I will remind you, of course, that you're listening to CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM from downtown Nanaimo. You can catch us online at www.chly.ca. You can listen live streaming if you're out of our rather small listening range. If you're going to do that, listen to the lo-fi link. Please don't hog up the bandwidth, right? Okay, let's get the little piggy song. Okay, well, let's see. That takes care of the weather. Let's move into this funky little poem, and I hope it puts a smile in your heart. And let's do that. I've got some funky tunes for that setup. How about some water sounds? Anyone like water out there? There we go. There's some water sounds coming on. Sounds kind of rough out there, doesn't it? Okay, this is called A Spiritual Conspiracy. It is an author unknown. It's an anonymous poem. Let's get into this. On the surface of the world right now, there is war and violence, and things seem dark. But calmly and quietly at the same time, something else is happening underground. An inner revolution is taking place, and certain individuals are being called to a higher light. It is a silent revolution. From the inside out, from the ground up, this is a global operation, a spiritual conspiracy. There are sleeper cells in every nation on the planet, but you won't see us on the TV, and you won't read about us in the newspaper, and you won't often hear about us on the radio. For we don't seek glory. We don't wear any uniform. In fact, we come in all shapes and sizes, colors and styles. Most of us work anonymously. We are quietly working behind the scenes in every country and culture of the world. You could pass by one of us on the street and not even notice. We go undercover. We remain behind the scenes. It is of no concern to us who takes the final credit, but simply that the work gets done. During the day, many of us pretend to have normal jobs, but behind the false storefront at night is where the real work takes place. Some call us a conscious army. We are slowly creating a new world with the power of our minds and hearts. We follow with passion and joy. Our orders come from the central spiritual intelligence. We are dropping soft, secret love bombs when no one is looking. Poems, hugs, music, photography, movies, kind words, smiles, meditation and prayer, dance, social activism, websites, blogs, random acts of kindness. We each express ourselves in our own unique ways, with our own unique gifts and talents. Be the change you want to see in the world. That is the motto that fills our hearts. We know it is the only way real transformation takes place. We know that quietly and humbly we have the power of all the oceans combined. Our work is slow and meticulous, like the formation of mountains. It is not even visible at first glance. And yet, with it, entire tectonic plates shall be moved in the centuries to come. Love is the new religion of the 21st century. You don't have to be a highly educated person or have any exceptional knowledge to understand it. It comes from the intelligence of the heart, embedded in the timeless evolutionary pulse of all human beings. Be the change you want to see in the world. Nobody else can do it for you. We are now recruiting. Perhaps you will join us or already have. All are welcome. The door is open. Thank you. And there we are, there we are. Are those tears of joy I hear? Huh? A frustration, maybe? A pain? Could be a lot of things, couldn't it? Let's move on now. This comes to us from PrisonPlanet.com. The author is Paul Joseph Watson. It's called Ron Paul Slams Federal Reserve's New Dictatorial Powers. And this is a short piece that will lead us nicely into the Alex Jones segment from his radio show earlier this week. And he's talking about the Fed. So let's get into this. Congressman tells MSNBC that the very entity responsible for the economic crisis is now more powerful than Congress. Responding to the Obama administration's new regulatory reform plan, which will officially hand the Federal Reserve complete dictatorial control over the U.S. economy, Congressman Ron Paul told MSNBC that the Fed was now more powerful than Congress. I gotta close the door. Hold on. The Federal Reserve is now more powerful than Congress. Paul emphasized that no amount of regulation could compensate for a financial system created and controlled by the Federal Reserve that was completely unstable to begin with. Quote, the regulations should be on the Federal Reserve. We should have transparency of the Federal Reserve. They can create trillions of dollars to bail out their friends, and we don't even have any transparency of this. They're more powerful than the Congress, said Paul. As we reported yesterday, the new rules would see the Fed given the authority to regulate any company whose activity it believes could threaten the economy and the markets. Obama's regulatory reform plan is nothing less than a green light for the complete and total takeover of the United States by a private banking cartel that will usurp the power of existing regulatory bodies, who are now being blamed for the financial crisis in order that their status can be abolished and their roles handed over to the all-powerful Fed. They're giving a tremendous amount of more power to the Federal Reserve, the very institution that created our problem. That's about the way Washington works, said Congressman Paul. Quoting him again, too much regulation to begin with, so they give it more. The Federal Reserve creates the problem, so we give them more power. It's fiat money that's the problem. So we allow them to double the money supply? You can't solve the problems that way. That's like saying you can take care of a drug addict by just giving him more drugs, concluded Paul, adding that the lack of understanding about how the Federal Reserve created the problem and how the free market ought to work was the root of the crisis. There we are. PrisonPlanet.com, if you don't know about that site, that's one worth. So let's move on now to Alex Jones. Oh, you know what? I was going to play a funky little tune. Darn it, before I read that Ron Paul piece. Well, you know what? I'm going to do that. This is a this is an interesting piece here. It's from Ashley McIsaac, Helter's Celtic CD. It's called Oh, Yes, I Am. And then after that, then you're going to hear the Alex Jones talking about the Federal Reserve and this recent bill that's before Congress. So enjoy this, and I'll see you in a little while.
private offshore banks are able to get away with this because it's so incredibly outrageous. Ron Paul slams Federal Reserve's new dictatorial powers. Congressman tells MSNBC that the very entity responsible for the economic crisis is now more powerful than Congress. Now, that's what Ron Paul said yesterday evening. We said yesterday morning in our article breaking this down at PrisonPlanet.com, Obama regulatory reform plan officially establishes banking dictatorship in the United States. And I've even gotten emails of people going, oh, it's not that bad. Okay, let me explain something. The banker bailout bill of last year said the Federal Reserve cannot be audited, cannot be looked into. None of the banks that are given the money can be investigated. The money can go to offshore banks. The money can go to China to pay them off to implement global carbon taxes. That was in USA Today. They can do whatever they want. They're offshore private corporation, and you don't have any say. And it's unlimited money. Now, they said that they would immediately spend the trillions of dollars, not $700 billion. They admitted that was just a really big number to put out there to you. The $700 billion was just a really big number, actually small compared to the real number, just so people could quantify that it wasn't an unlimited amount. But Bloomberg reports $14.8 trillion in the first 7 months since that bailout. And that number's a month old. We'll be getting new numbers soon. It makes me so angry. I can hardly even continue this radio show right now. I'm serious. I mean, this is so outrageous. People should be in the streets everywhere demanding that the Federal Reserve chairman be arrested, that all these criminal offshore thugs that have come in and engaged in a corporate takeover and then use the country like their own private credit card, running up the debt to the stratosphere in your names and your children's names. And so what new power could they get? Day one, they said, give us the bailout money and we will get the economy going and get the loans going. And now interest rates in reality are higher. People are like, wait a minute, interest rates are at zero. I don't mean interest rates for the banks. I mean the real interest rates are up. Loans are being made. That's official numbers. Comprende? The economy is in free fall. It's depression level already, and it's going to be unbelievably bad. But the globalists are busy taking the tens of trillions they've stolen, speculating in the stock market, so some of the stocks are up, and that's fooling some of the people out there. Heaven help you. The real economy is dying, and everything is being fed into the casino stock market. It's all paper. It's all derivative crud. It's a fraud. It's a scam. And the bankers know that. They've got to take all these trillions and get real assets, and a lot of people aren't selling. Oh, GM, you're not going to sell. We'll just federalize you and sell you off to foreign corporations. Oh, your steel mills. The feds say that's part of vital infrastructure. They're seizing it and handing it over to foreign interest. Shareholders in the private Federal Reserve. So see, what new power could they get if they were already given total secrecy and unlimited funds back in October of last year? The next phase would be to call for a new Bank of the World with new regulatory powers over the planet. And they've now done that. And so their regional bank, the Federal Reserve, has to have the unlimited powers now so we can be ruled by this offshore behemoth. And so they're going to run the Congress, the White House, all private industries. The bill states anything and everything connected to the economy, they are over it. And they got paramilitary enforcers ready to come into your factory, your business, your restaurant, your car dealership and take it over. They are going to steal physically at the point of a gun everything this country's built. Oh, man, look, we'll cover the financial stuff next hour. And I don't want to sound like a broken record on it. It's hardly anybody gets how big this is. That they've stolen more than the GDP in 7 months, $14.8 trillion. I mean, they're just destroying everything. Do you know what this means? And I've got all these economic numbers coming in. Housing prices dropped by 40% in New York. Another one, New York State unemployment soars to 33-year high. the government saying it's 10%. Every economist we have on, top economist, say it's 20%. And they're saying it's going to go to more like 30 in the next few years. You know what that means? That's higher than the Depression. And they're openly taking the stimulus money and hiring youth brigades that march around in red and black uniforms. And the New York Times reports they're hiring felons for the youth brigades. I mean, I'm living in the outer limits of Twilight Zone. I'm sick of it. I got children that live in this country. It's really happening. Everything the old timers warned us about with the New World Order, because they were in and out of government. They were in the military. They saw this being set up. They read the documents.
Okay, there it is, Alex Jones talking about the Fed. And what seems to be going on? The bankers are taking over, aren't they? And, well, pretty scary, pretty scary. All I can suggest is that, you know, inform yourself and, I guess, be aware of what's coming and why. And you know, don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. I'm not saying go out and do something stupid, but I guess maybe if you can get off the grid as much as possible, remember the things that are important, and it's not your job. Guarantee you that. I ran into a fellow, actually he's a fellow American. He was up from California, and we got talking. And his question was, what do you do? what do you do? And I thought, is he talking about how do I pay my rent, or where is my passion, and you know, what is that? And sadly, I wish I could have taken this back. I told him how I pay my rent first, and that's not who I am. And, I mean, not that I know who I am. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate question, though, isn't it? But a big part of who I am is this silly little show I got going on, and that's... And that seems to give me hope. And actually, I had a couple nice things happen. This was yesterday. This is Ron and I were going to go to the Nanaimo River for a swim and enjoy some peaceful time in nature. And the car broke down. We stopped for a sandwich, and it wouldn't start again. And these two fellows, I guess you'd call them kind of biker dudes. I mean, that's, I guess, what they were. And you know what? They spent over 2 hours making sure that our car got back on the road. They took two trips into Nanaimo to pick up parts. The first one was wrong. They went and did it again. And it's just over and beyond. You know, I mean, they were paying it forward. That was really, really cool. And they wouldn't accept any money. We insisted. But, you know, they said, no, that's, you know, we're not doing this for money. And, you know, and let's hope that good things come. And that was pretty nice, and it gave me some hope. And then the same day, yesterday, I got a letter, a snail mail letter, from a listener of this show, Emily, in Edmonton. And she's with Edmonton 911 Truth, and they've put on a couple conferences in this last year. And she wrote me to thank me for, well, not only helping to promote their events, but thank me for doing what I'm doing week in and week out. And I don't get too many fan letters, and I'm not saying that that's what it was, but it made me feel good. It really did. And it kind of re-energized my batteries for a little while, and it gave me, you know, more hope. And, you know, that it's not you and, you know, your neighbors that you need to be afraid of. That's not where the problem is. And there's a very concerted effort being put on us right now, a big lie that we can't trust each other. And that's not true. That's not true. We can't trust the talking face on the TV, and we can't trust the politicians in Ottawa. Your neighbors, that's all you got. After you and your family and your community, that's what you got. And let's try to remember that, I guess. So there's kind of some neat things that happened this week, and we're going to move on to another audio piece. This comes to us from Edmonton 911 Speaker's Corner, so well done, Edmonton. This one right here, Doug was out on the street civil informationing and recording people that chose to be recorded on camera, because they're going to be on YouTube. And this piece right here is how has the media covered 9/11? And as I explained to you at the beginning of the show, Jonathan Kay is going to be on this show in a couple of weeks' time. And, well, he is the media. He's the big bad media from Canwest, which is one of the Canadian 10 Canadian corporations that are part of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. This, well, do you want to call it corporatist? Or do you want to call it fascist? It's whatever word you want to use for the, because it's certainly not democratic, you know, and, yeah. So let's get to that. Yeah, this is a six-minute piece, and there's one chap who is there's one fellow that stands out because he basically says, well, you know, the media's done a pretty good job with 9/11, and it's quite obvious to me that this fellow hasn't looked into 9/11, that he's accepted the official story as it is, and that so it was interesting to hear that point as well. So thanks, Doug in Edmonton, for this Speaker's Corner, and that's what we're going to be looking at, 9/11 as treated by the media. And then when we come back, I'm going to play the first half of a lecture by my favorite truther, Dr. David Ray Griffin, a recent lecture. This comes to us from Boston U, April 11th, 2009. So this is brand new information, and I have an awful lot of respect for this fellow. It's the first book that I read on 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor. And, so let's get on to those things, shall we? Alrighty, so let's not forget, you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM from Nanaimo, online at www.chly.ca. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show. I'm your host, Raymond Geisler. If you ever want to contact me, if you have an idea for a story or someone you want to have on the show, you can contact me at, this is my email address, RaymondTruthRadio@Hotmail.com. That's RaymondTruthRadio@Hotmail.com. And I also have a website where I list what was on each show and include links to for you to do your own research on your own time. The shows are archived as well, so you can listen to past shows. For example, I had Kevin Barrett on last week, and boy, was that ever, that fellow's done so much in the 9/11 movement in the last couple of years, and it was really neat to have an in-depth discussion with, touching on so many of the different things that he's been a part of. So that was cool, and plus he's a radio host as well, so that was pretty neat. So did I give the address? I don't think I did. It is Unbossed, that's UNBOSSED, unbossed.livejournal.com. Unbossed.livejournal.com. Okay, so Edmonton 9/11 Speakers Corner, and we're going to hear David Ray Griffin. Talk to you again shortly.
Today's question on 9/11 Speakers Corner. It's been 8 years after the attacks on 9/11, and there's been a growing concern that the official count of 9/11 is highly questionable. Do you think mainstream media has been fair at covering this? And of course, the second question is, do you believe that we need to have a new criminal investigation of the events of 9/11?
I think mainstream media has had their hands tied to a certain extent because there are certain things that they're allowed to and not allowed to ask. I mean, the U.S. government obviously has certain, strengths. Is able to tell them, no, you can't go there for security reasons. So, the media is not able to get all the information that they need. Whether criminal investigation at this point, I don't know, why not? I mean, you still hear about war crimes from World War II are still coming up, Sure, absolutely, it would be good. But I think the bigger focus right now is the economy. So I think the U.S. government is more focused on making sure people have jobs and homes to live in, that sort of a thing. And I think security is always an important issue, but specifically related to September 11, 2001, probably a little bit on the back burner right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
I would support it, though, but I could understand why it wouldn't happen right now.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Do you think mainstream media has been fair covering these concerns?
Mainstream media, no, because they're all mostly government-based and whatnot. Everyone that tries to do something, whether it be, was it freelance or whatnot, gets blacklisted.
So the mainstream media have neglected to cover this, these concerns by citizens?
Neglected to cover it, are scared to cover it. Sometimes, unfortunately, if people have an opinion, they get fired.
I was just thinking of Rosie O'Donnell. She began talking about the World Trade Center 7 on The View, and it was within a week she was gone. They fired her. I don't know if it was directly related to 9/11, but she lost her job.
Well, bear in mind, she works for Barbara Walters. So her political agenda might be a little different as well.
Right. Good point. Do you think we need a new criminal investigation?
I definitely do think we need one. We have a new president in America now who hopefully might shine some light. Who knows what's going on with that? I don't overly follow his amalgamation. But yes, definitely.
Conspiracy theories and that. I mean, I think the media has covered it as much as they'll let. I'm sure that, especially with dealing with the United States, that there's stuff you're never going to find out. Like, they might have had some warnings that they just blew off, you know what I mean? Someone might have told them, look, this is going to happen, and of course, they're in the United States. If they didn't get it from their CIA or whatever, they would blow it off. And to reopen it, I don't really think that that's going to do much, you know. I mean, bring a lot of pain back. People had people there, but I think, I don't know, I just think, like I said, it was a bunch of terrorists that happened to get planes because security was so lax. I mean, now it's gone the other way. It's, you look at it, look at all the money since 9/11 for security. It's just, people don't realize the terrorists, they just think they killed like 3,500 people. They've cost the states. Now, I think since then, what they've spent going to Afghanistan, like, look at their economy. I mean, it pretty much made them go broke.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but with the investigating in, I don't think so. I think it was just like I said.
Do you think that mainstream media has been fair at covering this?
Absolutely not.
How so?
I believe there's a conspiracy in which they're trying to make it look like it was done by terrorists, but I believe it was an inside job. And I've done quite a bit of research on it. It just seems that there's a hidden agenda involved, and I don't buy the official story. There's too many holes and just different things I've heard. I can't explain to you in great detail how I know these things, but just my intuitive feeling is that it's not what they say is going on.
Do you think we need another criminal investigation?
Oh, I would love one, and I hope there is one, but I'm not sure that will happen, but we can always hope and send out positive energy and hope that does come about.
The question is, do we in Canada need to do a criminal investigation of the events of 9/11?
No, I think it's been covered enough, and the solution to the problem, starting a war, I don't think it's going to solve anything, because I think it's just going to drag on to another Vietnam, and it's not going to go anywhere. As far as what happened, it's a tragic thing, but you have to just accept it as it's more of a, I think it's more of a, it's a spiritual warfare, and it's about the United States being evil one, and the United States thinks Saudi Arabia's evil ones, and, you know, it goes on and on and on, and I think it's just a spiritual thing that, spiritual beliefs that they think they're doing justice to their God, and then we think we're doing justice to our God and defending the country, but I do think the United States was in the right, that they had to respond to terrorism. They can't just say, pat them on the back and say, well, we'll go on with it because they want to do something else. So something has to be done. You've got to show these people that, you know, you've got to be pushed around. The world power can't be pushed around like they are. So they had to do something. But I don't think they should, I think enough has been done. I think they should pull out.
You think mainstream media has covered this topic enough?
I think they have. I'm happy with it, you know. You can't go on and on and on with it, you know, and dig and dig and dig, because there's no real answers to solving the problem that is. up, and you just have to accept it and go on. But I think they did a good job. A lot of people are, you know, they were shocked, and now it's a healing process. They want to get over it. So why, you know, keep bringing it up and up, you know, especially the people that lost the loved ones.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Corey, the first question is, do you think the mainstream media has done enough to cover the events of 9/11?
I think there's been a great deal of coverage. Whether or not that coverage has been entirely balanced or well-researched may be another matter. But as I've not done any research myself, it's hard to know what the truth is.
You hear a lot of conspiracy theories floating around, and there seems to be more and more people questioning the events of 9/11. Do you think there should be a new criminal investigation into the events of 9/11, or are you satisfied with what we got?
It's not something that I've put a great deal of time into, as I feel that I have to accept that I will never know the truth. I think that it seems very suspicious, and that there are a great deal of conspiracy theories going around, and so it would be best for everyone concerned, I think, if there was a thorough investigation by a neutral third party, perhaps, but I don't know if it's possible to find one or to do a thorough investigation. But it's still something that people are very concerned about, and I certainly hope that it's not forgotten and not glossed over, and that it doesn't continue to be a divisive issue for people.
Well, thank you very much for your comments, sir.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, there it is. That's most recent edition of Edmonton Speaker's Corner. Actually, Doug was holding off on that piece until after the Jonathan Kay interview. And, Doug, go ahead and put that on YouTube. And thanks for asking that question and trying to generate some ideas for the Jonathan Kay interviews that he's doing for his look at the 9/11 Truth Movement. Real curious to see whether it's going to be a hit piece or what it's going to be. You know, like I was saying, you can't study 9/11 for, you know, in depth and not very quickly come to the conclusion that a lot of the story is provably false, the official story, that is. So there we are. And moving on right now, my favorite voice from the 9/11 Truth Movement, Dr. David Ray Griffin, a retired theologian. If you are new to 9/11, pull over in the car and you're going to... Your life is going to change. This fellow here is going to wrap up a lot of key points, as well as some of the newest research. He's going to conclude with some very positive breakthroughs that the Truth Movement has won, kicking, screaming, and fighting to get this information out. You know, going up against the big media and the governments who are playing, you know, if not hush-hush, you know, calling us conspiracy wackos and, well, rather immature things like that. And, you know, sadly, that is effective because there's a lot of people that I feel are afraid to be made fun of by those liars on TV, you know, as if, you know, anything Bill O'Reilly says is going to, you know, change my heart and my soul. And, you know, the Bill O'Reillys don't scare me, you know, and if the left wing, what do they call them, the gatekeepers, you know, the Chomskys and the Zins and the Naomi Kleins, you know, they're looking after their paycheck. That's, you know, what else is it, you know, for them just to simply, you know, blanket that, oh, conspiracies don't happen. That's, you know, silly you. Well, you know better, don't you? So where I was going with that, if you're new to the Truth Movement, give this a good, hard listen and look up David Ray Griffin. Purchase some of his books. I recommend them all. I've read nearly all of them. He's got a new one and then another one out very shortly. I mean, this guy really is putting out a book every 6 months, it seems. So let's do that. It is called 9/11 Time for a Second Look. This is from April 11th, 2009. So there we go. Hope you enjoy this, and we'll get back to you before long. Be well.
The lecture is called 9/11, Time for a Second Look. in suggesting that it is time for people to take a second look at 9/11, I primarily have in mind people who decided long ago that the attacks of 9/11 happened essentially the way the Bush administration and the official reports said they happened, and who therefore decided that the so-called 9/11 truth movement, which disputes that account, is composed of crazy conspiracy theorists with no capacity to evaluate evidence objectively. Having formed those views long ago, such people, including most journalists, have been impervious to any arguments presented by the 9/11 truth movement. They simply roll their eyes and move on. However, both the truth movement and the available evidence have changed dramatically in the past 3 years. Because of these changes, it is not rational to reject the claims of the movement out of hand without taking a second look. If you are a person who has had such an attitude, you cannot, in the face of these changes, simply roll your eyes without exhibiting the very irrationality with which you charge those whom you have called conspiracy theorists. My lecture is also addressed, albeit indirectly, to fellow members of the truth movement. Some members have decided now that Bush and Cheney are out of office, and the Obama administration has reversed some of their 9/11-based policies, that getting the truth about 9/11 exposed is not so important anymore. Other members of the movement, seeing that the Obama administration still presupposes that al-Qaeda attacked America on 9/11, have concluded that there is no hope that the truth will ever come out. So we might as well give up. To such people, I suggest that getting the truth revealed is just as important as it ever was. Because many 9/11-based policies, especially the war in Afghanistan, have not been reversed. I also suggest that because of the changes in the political landscape, combined with developments in the 9/11 truth movement, we now have, really for the first time, a realistic chance of getting a real investigation. I turn now to my topic, why official conspiracy theorists should take a look, a second look, at 9/11. I use the term official conspiracy theorists advisedly. Quite often, people who believe the official theory about 9/11 speak contemptuously of members of the 9/11 truth movement as conspiracy theorists. But this is irrational. A conspiracy occurs whenever two or more people plan in secret to do something illegal, such as rob a bank or defraud a corporation's customers. To hold a conspiracy theory about some event is simply to believe that it came about because of some conspiracy. According to the Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11, which became the official account, the attacks resulted from a conspiracy between Osama bin Laden and 19 young members of al-Qaeda. The official account is therefore a conspiracy theory, and in fact was the original conspiracy theory about 9/11. What this means is that everyone holds a conspiracy theory about 9/11. Debate about 9/11 is therefore not a debate between conspiracy theorists and people who reject conspiracy theories. It is simply between a debate between those who accept the official Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11, their conspiracy theory, and those who accept the alternative theory, according to which 9/11 resulted from a conspiracy within the Bush-Cheney administration. Those who believe the official conspiracy theory, therefore, cannot rationally reject the alternative theory on the grounds that it is a conspiracy theory. To be rational, they must ask, which conspiracy theory is better supported by the relevant facts? We always appreciate applause or laughter because it gives the speaker a chance to get a drink. So. Let me make clear that I do not use the term official conspiracy theorist as a term of reproach. There is nothing wrong with accepting the official conspiracy theory. I did myself for a year and a half. It is only a problem if you are a true believer, meaning that you are so certain that the Bush-Cheney interpretation is correct that you refuse to look at any evidence that might suggest otherwise. One reason why it is irrational to keep believing the Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11 without being willing to look at possibly contradictory evidence is that there now exists grounds for being skeptical of this theory that did not exist at the time that it became imprinted on most minds. What a great crowd. At that time, for example, it was not known that the Bush-Cheney administration would tell enormous lies that would lead to millions of deaths, including thousands of American deaths. Besides the lies about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the White House, after 9/11, ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to lie about the air at the World Trade Center site, saying that it was safe to breathe. They knew otherwise. 2 days before, in fact, the Boston Globe had a story reporting that the air had very high levels of asbestos and other dangerous particles. Nevertheless, and the EPA was going to say this. The Bush-Cheney White House ordered them to change their statement and tell people the air is safe to breathe. As a result, rescue workers and cleanup workers went out there without even a flimsy cotton mask on, many of them. And as a result, now about 60% of those workers are ill. And if they have not died already, the prediction by many people is that more people will die from the rescue and cleanup than died on 9/11 itself. In the face of this information, it would be difficult to claim that the Bush-Cheney administration would have been morally incapable of orchestrating 9/11 and the subsequent cover-up. We also now have reasons, not widely known at the time, to be skeptical of the official reports. Most people have assumed that the 9/11 Commission was run by its co-chairman, former New Jersey governor, Republican Thomas Kane, and former Democratic congressman Lee Hamilton. They have thought of it, therefore, as an independent, nonpartisan commission. But the 9/11 Commission was actually run by Philip Zelikow. He controlled the 85-person staff, which did all the work. And he was in charge of producing the 9/11 Commission report. And yet he was essentially a member of the Bush-Cheney White House. He had worked with Condoleezza Rice during the administration of the first President Bush on the National Security Council. Then during the Clinton years, Rice and Zelikow wrote a book together. Then when she became appointed National Security Advisor under the second President Bush, she brought Zelikow back to help with the transition to the new National Security Council. And then, most important, when she had the job of producing National Security Strategy of the United States of America for 2002, she brought on Zelikow to write it. There had been a first draft produced by a person in the State Department, but she said it wasn't bold enough, so she brought on Zelikow. Zelikow produced an extremely bold, even belligerent, document, which said, now that 9/11 has happened, we can no longer honor international law as traditionally understood. According to international law, no country is allowed to attack another country unless it knows that an attack from it is imminent, too imminent to take the matter to the Security Council of the United Nations. Zelikow said, no, now that 9/11 has happened, we cannot wait. So we must have the right to attack other countries before they are ready to attack us. This was a new radical doctrine of preemptive, preventive warfare, which Dick Cheney and other neocons had long wanted. And yet, Philip Zelikow was then put in charge of the 9/11 Commission, which should have been asking, among other things, the question, might the Bush administration have a motive for orchestrating or at least allowing 9/11? Also, we have learned more.
Okay, I throw in and also as well. I've got some things I'm going to take care of, play a couple pieces for you, and then we're going to get back to the David Ray Griffin lecture. This is only 2 months old. Lots of good stuff. I hope you're enjoying this. I sure did. You can learn a whole lot from it. He's calling it a 9/11 time for a second look. So let's move on, play a couple short pieces, and then we'll get back to that lecture, all right?
CHLY, baby. 101.7 CHLY.
That's right. CHLY, baby. ABC. All right, very nice. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show. Let's get back to the David Ray Griffin lecture. And there we go. That's what we're going to do. Be well out there.
Recently, from New York Times reporter Philip Sheehan, in his book called The Commission, more things about Zelikow. We learn that in spite of his promises to the contrary, he remained in contact with Condoleezza Rice, and also with Karl Rove, the ultimate political operator in the White House, who was intensely interested in the 9/11 Commission, fearing that it might say something that would cost them the re-election. Also, Sheehan revealed that before the staff had its first meeting, before any research had been done, he had written an outline of the final report. Complete, Sheehan says, with chapter headings, subheadings, and sub-subheadings. Sheehan also revealed that Kane and Hamilton conspired with Zelikow to keep the existence of this outline a secret from the staff. In a book they wrote about the 9/11 Commission, Kane and Hamilton criticized conspiracy theorists because rather than forming their theories on the basis of facts, they start with their theories and then look for facts or perhaps fabricate facts to support their theories. By contrast, Kane and Hamilton said, the 9/11 Commission started with the relevant facts, not with a conclusion. We were not setting out to advocate one theory or interpretation of 9/11 versus another, they said. And yet, they admitted, Zelikow assigned the subject of Al-Qaeda to one of the staff's teams, which was told to tell the story of Al-Qaeda's most successful operation, the 9/11 attacks. If that is not starting with a theory, what would be? If the 9/11 Commission was not independent of the Bush-Cheney White House, what about NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was given the task of preparing the official reports about the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, and Building 7? NIST is an agency of the Department of Commerce, and therefore, during all the years it was working on these reports, it was an agency of the Bush-Cheney administration, run by an appointee of that administration. Recently, a former employee of NIST has spoken out, saying that NIST had been fully hijacked from the scientific into the political realm. Scientists working for NIST, he says, lost their scientific independence and became little more than hired guns. Everything that came from the hired guns, he added, was routinely filtered through the front office and assessed for political implications before release. Moreover, he said, NIST reports on the World Trade Center also had to be approved by the National Security Agency and the Office of Management and Budget, an arm of the Executive Office of the President, which had a policy person specifically delegated to provide oversight on our work. As a result, NIST reports, which say the Twin Towers in Building 7 came down without the aid of explosives, are political, not scientific documents, as any serious examination of these reports will reveal. The authors, with their PhDs in physics and engineering, could not possibly believe the things they have written. If reasons to take a second look at 9/11 are provided by new information about the Bush-Cheney administration and the official reports supporting its conspiracy theory, the same is true of the new shape of the 9/11 truth movement. At one time, it was dismissed as a bunch of kids on the Internet. Then I wrote the new Pearl Harbor, and it was dismissed as a bunch of kids on the Internet and an aging theologian. George Monbiot, writing in The Guardian, referred to members of the movement as morons and idiots. Alexander Coburn, writing in Counterpunch, The Nation, and Le Monde Diplomatique, referred to the movement's members as the 9/11 conspiracy nuts, saying they know nothing about the real world, especially the world of military affairs. Lacking any conception of evidence, he added, they represent the ascendancy of magic over common sense and reason. Insofar as critics of the 9/11 movement could, by ignoring many of the early members of the movement, such as a former police officer, a world-class economics professor in Canada, a commercial pilot who had flown 757s and 767s, an acute historian, and many others, by ignoring all those, they could portray me as the head of this movement. Monbiot referred to me as its high priest. Another left-wing critic called me its guru. So they could somewhat plausibly present the 9/11 movement as a religious movement comprised of people who knew nothing about the real world. As one critic put it, Griffin, being a theologian, is not qualified to talk about anything but myths and fairy tales. I did reply that if that's true, I should be eminently qualified to talk about the official conspiracy theory. Nevertheless, the 9/11 truth movement can be easily dismissed insofar as people retain an image of it that was formed several years ago, when it could be portrayed as led by people who have no expertise in the relevant fields. Even if that caricature, like most caricatures, contained a grain of truth, then it is now completely false. The intellectual leadership of the 9/11 truth movement is now exercised by scientists and other professionals who definitely know something about the real world. Many of these professionals have formed organizations dedicated to discovering and publicizing the truth about 9/11. A few years ago, some scientists formed the SPINE, the Scientific Panel for the Investigation of 9/11. Other scientists more recently formed Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, the main work of which has been carried out by physicists and chemists. Shortly thereafter, detractors of the truth movement said that if there were any validity to the claims these scientists make about the World Trade Center, they would be able to get papers published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Over the past year, scientists affiliated with Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice have published 3 papers in peer-reviewed scientific journals. The lead author of the most recent of these papers, which appeared in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, is Niels Herrick, a professor of chemistry at the University of Copenhagen. These scientists, who know something about the chemical constituents of the real world, report finding many elements in the World Trade Center dust that should not be there if the official theory, according to which these buildings came down solely because of fire and gravitation, if that were true. A few years ago, after some physicists and chemists had joined the movement, detractors said, "They don't really count. The question of what brought down the World Trade Center buildings is a question for engineers, and your movement doesn't have any." This was in 2005, and that was true. The following year, by the way, some of you heard that interview I did on Democracy Now!, when Amy Goodman brought in a hitman. And this became the point of issue at the end of the interview, that he said, "You don't have any engineers." Now, it was true. It was the case that I had located one in Mexico. And I had contacted him and tried to get him to speak out. He decided it would not be prudent to do so. So I had to admit I didn't dare name him. So I had to say, "No, we don't have any." Well, the following year, architect Richard Gage formed Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And as of today, over 600 licensed architects and engineers have signed a petition saying the official story cannot be true. We need a new investigation. These are people who know something about that part of the world that consists of steel frame high-rise buildings. And they know that the official story, according to which fires caused the Twin Towers and buildings to come down in virtual free fall, simply cannot be true. For example, Jack Keller, emeritus professor of engineering at Utah State University, who had been given special recognition by Scientific American, has said about the collapse of Building 7, obviously it was the result of controlled demolition. A similar judgment has been offered by two emeritus professors of structural engineering at Switzerland's most prestigious institute, the Federal Institute of Technology, along with hundreds of other engineers and architects that belong to Gage's organization. Firefighters also have expert knowledge that is relevant to what happened in New York City on 9/11. And this past year brought the formation of Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, who point out on the basis of their professional expertise why the NIST reports about the World Trade Center should not be believed. As you know, thanks to Alphonse being here, there is also an organization called Veterans for 9/11 Truth, which... which contains several former military officers. They, I would venture to say, probably know a little more about the world of military affairs than Alexander Coburn. Another professional organization with relevant expertise is Pilots for 9/11 Truth, which includes in its ranks many former commercial and military pilots, including some interceptor pilots, who call incredible the official story about why the 9/11 airliners were not intercepted. This organization has also devoted special attention to the attack on the Pentagon, giving numerous reasons why the official account of that attack simply cannot be true. The latest of the professional organizations to form, indeed it is being formed this very week, is Intelligence Officers for 9/11 Truth. One of the first people to join was William Christensen, a former senior CIA official. If you are one of the many people who just knows that the alternative conspiracy theory is simply too implausible to be worth your spending a day or two to study the evidence, just listen to what he wrote in 2006. I spent the first 4.5 years since September 11th utterly unwilling to consider seriously the conspiracy theories surrounding the attacks of that day. In the last half year, and after considerable agony, I've changed my mind. I now think there is persuasive evidence that the events of September 11 did not unfold as the Bush administration and the 9/11 Commission would have us believe. The backbone of the 9/11 Truth Movement is now constituted by these professional organizations: the scientists, architects, engineers, firefighters, military officers.
Okay, this is all very interesting stuff. David Griffin's talking about the different organizations. He is a member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, but he talks about some of the specific ones, many of which have been interviewed on the show as well, so that's kind of a neat thing, too. Well, I just want to remind you that you are indeed listening to David Ray Griffin, if you're just joining us. Maybe the foremost thinker and writer in the truth movement. The lecture is from 2 months ago out of Boston. He's calling it 9/11 Time for a Second Look. So this is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM. You can check us out online at www.chly.ca. Okay, let's get back to David Ray Griffin.
Pilots and intelligence officers. And there are still more professional organizations. The past year has witnessed also the formation of medical professionals for 9/11 Truth. And by the way, let me suggest, if you have pen and paper, you might want to write some of these down, because you can go on Google and find them. And if you are a potential candidate for joining these, or you have friends who might be, just go on Google. You'll find that and find out how to become a member. So medical professionals for 9/11 Truth. Also, lawyers for 9/11 Truth. And this is most important. I'll refer to it again a little later. And of special significance, given where we're meeting and being hosted by the School of Theology, religious leaders for 9/11 Truth. So I'm hoping... Yeah. Our present goal is to get up to 100. We have got several really prominent religious leaders from this country and around the world who have already signed. And we do have a very impressive set of readings on there by many leading theologians and philosophers of religion. So I encourage you, if you want to do some reading about 9/11 from a Christian or Jewish or Muslim, or when we're working on getting Buddhist and Hindu and other contributions, from that one of those points of view, go on there and find out what is available. Also, very recently, political leaders for 9/11 Truth, which already includes past or present members of the parliaments of Japan, Italy, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and Europe, and a former United States governor. Accordingly, people who have thought of the 9/11 movement as constituted by individuals who can be dismissed as conspiracy nuts, even morons and idiots, need to reevaluate. That is, if they want their opinions to be based on the real world. Here is the present situation, and if you're going to quote any one sentence from tonight's lecture, I would suggest this one. I know it's important because it's in italics. Among independent scientists and professionals in the relevant fields who have studied the evidence, the weight of scientific and professional opinion is now overwhelmingly on the side of the 9/11 Truth movement. Whereas well over 1,000 such people have gone on public record questioning the official conspiracy theory, there are virtually no scientists or professionals in the relevant fields who have gone on the record in support of that official conspiracy theory, except for those who are not independent. That is, those whose livelihoods depend on their continuing to give public support to the official theory. Now, this caveat is most important because of the famous statement by Sinclair Lewis, 1935, he said, "It is difficult to get a man..." Now, this is 1935, so forgive his language. "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it." Except for such people, virtually everyone who has expertise in a relevant field and who has seriously studied the evidence rejects the official conspiracy theory. It is time, therefore, for journalists and everyone else to take a second look. Journalists often say they cannot write about an issue that is considered old news. They must have new evidence. Another reason why it is time for a second look is the existence of an abundance of new evidence. There is so much, in fact, that I can only mention a tiny portion of it. Some of this new evidence has amazingly been supplied by the FBI. This is amazing. Yeah, let's hear it for the FBI. Nothing more valuable in the eyes of God than a repentant sinner. Although the FBI was originally the agency that most laid down and defended and protected the official theory, it has recently provided several revelations that undermine this account. One example involves one of the central pillars of the official conspiracy theory, the claim that the attacks were organized by Osama bin Laden. That claim is still used to justify the American military effort in Afghanistan, which President Obama recently encouraged Europeans to support with more enthusiasm. If you will go to the website of the FBI called Most Wanted Terrorists and look under Osama bin Laden, spell it with a U, Osama, you will find that although he is wanted for various terrorist attacks, the 9/11 attacks are not mentioned. When a member of the 9/11 Truth Movement contacted FBI orders to ask why, he reached Rex Toom, the chief of investigative publicity. And when he asked why not, Toom said, because the FBI has no hard evidence of bin Laden's responsibility for 9/11. Now, I suspect that you, in the Boston Globe, may have the finest newspaper in America. I mean, by a process of elimination, it cannot be the New York Times or the Washington Post, so it must be the Boston Globe. And surely, therefore, all of you have read about that, right? The Boston Globe didn't talk about this? Another example involves the recorded telephone calls from the airliners, through which people on the ground were told that the planes had been hijacked by Middle Eastern terrorists. Some 15 people reported that they had been called by loved ones using cell phones. Now, there were a lot more phone calls, but 15 of them, the people said, I was called on a cell phone. United Flight 93, the plane that reportedly crashed in Pennsylvania, was by itself said to have been the source of about a dozen of these cell phone calls, so it's sometimes called the cell phone flight. Dina Burnett alone reported having received 3 or 4 such calls from her husband, Tom Burnett, from Flight 93. She knew he was using his cell phone, she said, because I looked on my caller ID and I recognized his cell phone number.
Hey, friends, welcome back to Live Radio. You've been listening to David Ray Griffin, a recent lecture of his, and that's just half of it. I got the other half coming up. But, of course, it's time for the, I was going to say campus community updates, but let's call it the events update. What do we have going on? Okay, very nice. That will take care of the events update. And it is proudly brought to you by the following Canadian truth groups: Edmonton 9/11 Truth, Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth, and WarCriminalsOut.com. Three groups of people that clearly understand the importance of independent media, where you're getting things like lectures by David Ray Griffin. That's what we've been listening to and we're going to come back to. However, I've got a short little comedic piece here. It's It's called You Will Not Believe This, But It's True. Now, I can't verify any of this, so I don't know if it's true. It's probably pretty close to the truth, but you know what I'm saying. Really hard to... what is truth nowadays? That is a tough one, because you can go a lot of places and find out that there's two versions of truth over the same event. So, now, they're asking you to guess which organization the following points will be. Is it the NBA, the National Basketball Association, or the NFL, the National Football Association? So, really overly paid athletic fellows, are they perhaps getting into this trouble? Well, apparently 36 have been accused of spousal abuse, 7 have been arrested for fraud, 19 have been accused of writing bad checks, 117 have directly or indirectly bankrupted at least 2 businesses. That's interesting. 3 of them have done time for assault. 71 cannot get a credit card due to bad credit. Interesting. You wouldn't think so, would you? Okay. 14 have been arrested on drug-related charges. And 8 have been arrested for shoplifting. That's not very good. I've got a couple more here. 21 are currently defendants in lawsuits. Yes, the law is after them. They've been in trouble. And lastly, 84 have been arrested for drunk driving. Check this out. In the last year. Now, again, I don't have any information on this, so I don't know what year they were talking about. But 84 have been arrested for drunk driving. So who is that? Is that the NBA or the NFL? Well, I did tell you that this is that there is a trick to this. Of course, it's neither. And it's actually the 535 members of the United States Congress. Well done. All right. Give them a hand. So, 84 have been arrested for drunk driving in the last year. Well done. And you're still doing what you're doing. Okay, this is the same group of idiots that crank out hundreds of new laws each year designed to keep the rest of us in line. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, there's... Who is it? The NFL, the NBA, or Congress? Very nice. Okay, that will take care of that short little funny piece. Let's get back to the David Ray Griffin, the grand wizard of the 9/11 Truth Movement. He's speaking in Boston, and a lot of new information. This is a quality hour-long piece, and that's why you're listening to it, and I hope you're staying with it. So let's carry on, and... we'll get back to you in a little while, all right? You're listening to CHLY 101.7. This is the Unbought and Unbossed Show.
However, most of these calls were made when Flight 93 was reportedly at 35,000 or over 40,000 feet. But pilots and scientists in the 9/11 movement had pointed out that given the cell phone technology of 2001, successful calls from high-altitude airliners were extremely improbable, in fact, impossible. One of our scientists, Keith Dudney, a Canadian, who used to be quite well-known, he used to write a regular column for Scientific America, so he was considered a credible guy. He decided, let's get empirical, let's test it out. So he got all the cell phones he could find, every brand, and took them up in a single-engine plane and found that they all conked out at about 9,000 feet. Then he went up in a double-engine plane, which has more insulation, and found that they all went out by 7,000 feet. And so you can imagine with an airliner with an enormous amount of insulation, much lower. In fact, most anecdotal evidence suggests that cell phones will not work over 1,000 feet, if that. But defenders of the official story said, oh, no, 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 that's not true. 30,000 Popular Mechanics, you know, wrote a book defending the official theory. And one of its authors said 40,000, 50,000 feet, cell phone calls, perfectly possible. But while Popular Mechanics was making that brave claim. The CIA was pulling the rug out from it. This was 2006. At the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui, you remember the so-called 20th hijacker, the FBI was asked to turn in all sorts of evidence relating to 9/11. Part of their evidence was a report about phone calls from all four flights. What did they say when they got to flight 93? They said of the 37 calls from that flight, 35 of them were made on seatback phones, onboard phones, air phones. Two of them only were made on cell phones, and those were made when the plane was just about ready to crash, so it was down at a very low altitude. So you see, the FBI implicitly agreed with the 9/11 truth movement. High altitude phone calls from airliners were not possible. Well, what do we do then about all the people who said were absolutely convinced they got cell phone calls from their loved ones? You know, many people said, my husband, my wife said, I'm calling on the cell phone. In one case, a person was told that the passenger had borrowed a phone from next street neighbor. Well, in those cases, you might say, well, they got confused, they forgot, bad memory, whatever. But what about Dina Burnett? She couldn't have misunderstood. She saw the cell phone number of her husband, Tom. And she couldn't have misremembered. She told the FBI that very day, we have the written report. Then she went on talk shows and she talked about this. She wrote a book, talked about it. So what do we do about the fact that she evidently received a call, three or four calls from her husband's cell phone, and now the FBI says, no, he used an onboard phone. Now, this is speculation, but there is pretty good speculation. There is a technology that could explain that it was functioning at the time. In 1999, William Arkin, a well-known writer about military affairs, published an article in the Washington Post reporting an experiment, a demonstration that he had observed of the new technology of voice morphing, which allows people to simulate the voice of another person. And so well, in fact, that you could fool the best friend or even a spouse. He reported that he heard the voice of Colin Powell saying, I'm being treated well by my captors. He heard another well-known general saying, ladies and gentlemen, we have just launched World War III. Neither of those generals had made those statements, but everybody in the room who knew them and knew their voices would have thought it was them. Now, we know about the form of digital morphing, the visual kind, like in Forrest Gump, when Forrest Gump shakes hands with JFK. You know that didn't happen, and yet it was perfectly lifelike. And so Arkin points out, because of digital morphing, we can no longer say seeing is believing. You can see, but it may not be true. Many likewise pointed out, now thanks to voice morphing, hearing isn't necessarily believing either. Now, what about the phone, the number? Well, there are little devices you can order on the internet, in which it says, fake any phone call you want to. So you can make any phone call appear on somebody's caller ID that you would like it be. So at least it's possible, and to me it seems likely, that that's what happened. In any case, the FBI also turned in a report about Flight 77, which is the flight that allegedly struck the Pentagon. And this contradicts the official story even more. That is the FBI's report. The most important of all the phone calls from that day were two from Barbara Olson. That is, two who were reported by her husband, Ted Olson, Theodore Olson, who is the Solicitor General of the Department of Justice. And, of course, Barbara Olson was a well-known commentator on CNN. Ted Olson told CNN that day and told the FBI that Barbara had called him twice that morning, that she was on Flight 77, that hijackers had taken over the plane. They were armed with knives and... This is the only alleged phone call that mentioned box cutters. So this gives you an idea how important this story was to creating the official myth or story about 9/11, that we all know the hijackers had box cutters thanks to this one call. Another way this call was very important was that because she was very popular, especially with the right wing, this so outraged America that these evil Muslim Arab terrorists had killed Barbara Olson, that people were ready to go kill Arab Muslims. And a lot of people said, you know, it didn't matter too much if they were responsible for 9/11 or not. So this was instrumental to getting the whole psychology, the mentality of the American people ready to support the war on terror. Another way this call was important, there was a rumor that Flight 77 had crashed in the Midwest. The FAA took this very seriously. The FAA controllers had completely lost control, radar contact with the plane, and there was a report of a crash on the Ohio-Kentucky border. These calls reported from Barbara Olson were proof that Flight 77 was still aloft and therefore could have been what damaged the Pentagon. However, when you look at the FBI's report, and you can all read this for yourself, it's on a website, and if you don't know how to get to it, if you buy the New Pearl Harbor Revisited and look in the notes, you can find how to get there. Here is what the FBI report said. They're little graphics, so you can just read, see what they say. And here's what the graphic says about Barbara Olson. It does mention that she attempted a call. But it says, Barbara Olson attempted one call, unconnected, duration 0 seconds. Thank you. This is supposed to create a shock. But I'm surprised. Surely the Boston Globe reported this. This has been public knowledge since 2006. I can't believe it. Now, the reason this is so amazing is that the FBI is part of the Department of Justice. And yet this FBI report was saying that the story told on 9/11 by Ted Olson, the former Solicitor General of the Department of Justice, isn't true. Those calls never happened. That gives you two choices. Either Ted Olson lied, or he was deceived like Dina Burnett. Either way, the whole thing is a lie. It was based on deception. I happened to be invited to the European Parliament last year for the presentation of this new great movie by Giulietta Chiesa, a member of the Italian Parliament, a movie called Zero. How many have seen Zero? Oh, good, good. It, I would say it, if you're talking about full-length movies that cover all the many aspects of 9/11, it and Loose Change Final Cut are now the two movies, and I think they're equally good. They're both really, really excellent. Anyway, I was there, and then they had technological problems, and they couldn't get things to work. So Chiesa leaned over to me and said, kill some time, entertain the audience. So I just started ranting on. And so I told this story among others. And as I was telling this story, I said, you know, that's an amazing story. This should have been 3-inch headlines, screaming headlines in the Washington Post. But of course it wasn't. But then a few months later, a group called the Freebies, taking off from the Bee Gees, put out a musical, a DVD, called 9-11's Alive, based on Staying Alive, Staying Alive, 9-11's Alive, 9-11's Alive. And so I was particularly happy in the middle of that to see the Washington Post with 3-inch screaming headlines. FBI says story told by former Solicitor General is untrue. Well, how many people would still believe the official theory if they knew the facts that I've just revealed to you and the dozens of other facts, if we were willing to stay here a few more hours, that I could tell you about, which the Boston Globe failed to mention? Not very many. This illustrates my point that most people who continue to believe the Bush-Cheney conspiracy theory about 9/11 are simply unaware of dozens and dozens of facts that contradict this theory. For my final illustration of this point, I will discuss the collapse of Building 7 of the World Trade Center. The Truth Movement has long considered the collapse of this building to be the Achilles heel of the official theory, its most vulnerable spot. And for good reason. This building came down 5:21 that afternoon. It was not hit by a plane, and therefore no jet fuel was sprayed throughout it to start big fires. Therefore, this 47-story building had fires that lasted only on 6 floors. And yet, it came down in virtual freefall, straight down from a dead stop, just suddenly started moving at freefall acceleration. And it came straight down, and then it ended up in a relatively small, tidy pile. In other words, it looked every bit like the form of controlled demolition known as implosion, where you use explosives to collapse the building from the bottom and have the walls fold in on themselves, and that's how you get the rather tidy pile. Defenders of the official story clearly did not want Americans to think about Building 7. After 9/11 itself, as far as I know, this collapse was never shown on mainstream television, while we saw the Twin Towers ad nauseum, time after time after time, but no showing of Building 7. Likewise, the 9/11 Commission could not afford one sentence in its 571-page report to even mention that this 47-story building had collapsed. And this was a historic event, being the first time in the known universe in which a steel frame building had collapsed because of fire alone. Surely that would have been worth a sentence. Also, NIST, which had the task of reporting on it, delayed the report year after year after year. Originally, the reports were supposed to come out in 2004, and they said, we're not ready. They will do it in 2005. 2005, they put out the report on the World Trade Center, the towers, but said, oh, Building 7 is going to take a little longer. It'll come out next year. Next year came. They said, no, it'll come out in 2007. In 2007, they said, no, it'll come out in the beginning of 2008. Beginning of 2008, they said, it'll come out in August. Well, by golly, it did. The first draft came out in August. And then the final draft came out in November. Coincidentally, I'm sure, just before Bush and Cheney were ready to leave office. In any case, my next book, well, not quite my next book. My next book that's going to come out pretty quickly is going to be called Osama Bin Laden, Dead or Alive. And I argue that he's long been dead. And amazingly, it looks like we can pinpoint the date of death, either December 13th or 14th, 2001.
Okay, there we are, friends. I'm going to take a pause there. You are listening to Dr. David Ray Griffin explaining some of the many problems in the official story of what happened on 9/11. And, well, it's people like David Ray and the research that he's done and compiled. That is why no one has come on this show in 2.5 years to say I'm full of it and that the official story is true, the one that you get in your newspapers and television every day, that reality is, in fact, the full goods, and of course it's not. So, you know, if you think I'm full of hot air, do a little research yourself. Start with David Ray Griffin and see where it takes you. You know, there have been so few attempts to rebuke the things that have been compiled by the truth movement. You know, these little awkward pieces of truth that Dr. David Ray Griffin is talking about. And the only serious one that I can think of is the Popular Mechanics attempt at debunking the 9/11 truth movement. And I found that to be extremely weak for a number of reasons. I've done a review of that book in past shows, so I'm not going to follow that now. But that is just the way it is. If you know someone or you yourself, you know, would like to come on the show and discuss some of these problems in the official story, please do. I don't see that happening, you know, because when they start to look in, you very quickly find out that there are lots of problems in the story, and the more time you spend, the larger and more numerous the problems become. So, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to make our government accountable? To us, to the truth, to everything good. Everything good. So thanks to Mr. Griffin for doing his good work. Now, it is just before 10 o'clock. There is still another 15 minutes left on this lecture, which we are going to hear. We will complete it. There is no show after this one as of now, and I've just been putting on old playlists. And that's on it. So we need someone to fill this hour between 10 and 11. So there you are. This will be the final time you hear from me tonight. This is Raymond with the Unbought and Unbossed show. You can contact me at raymondtruthradio@hotmail.com. And there we are. Of course, you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM from Nanaimo. Let's conclude with, well, some good news as well, Dr. Griffin does. So there we are. I'll see you next week, friends. Bye-bye.
One little clue is the funeral announcement of Bin Laden's funeral on December 15th, 2001. And so I'm suggesting that, and also, I mean, the really crucial thing is that as the FBI, as the CIA will report, and former CIA operative Robert Baer, who wrote the book on which Syriana was somewhat based, has said he's checked with his fellow CIA officials who have the task of tracking Bin Laden, and not one of them can say that he's still alive, and that they all say we have not intercepted another message from him since December 13th, whereas prior to that, they were intercepting messages to and from Bin Laden rather regularly, and they just stopped on December 13th. So those two things present pretty good evidence. And then, of course, there's the question, well, what about all the audio tapes and videotapes in which bin Laden has appeared? Well, have you looked at some of those? None of them can be proved to be authentic, and some of them can clearly be seen to be inauthentic. So somebody is faking these things. My favorite is Blackbeard the Terrorist, where bin Laden, whose beard has been getting grayer and grayer and grayer, suddenly has a purely black beard. These guys are not geniuses. If our news organizations or our Congress were doing one-tenth of their job, this would have been exposed long, long, long ago. In fact, I have one of my books. I think it's actually my favorite book. It's called 9/11 Contradictions, an Open Letter to Congress and the Press. And I lay out 25 internal contradictions within the official story. There's no theory in this book. You can't dismiss it as conspiracy theory. It's just facts that this person who supports the official theory contradicts this person who supports the official theory on some very crucial thing, like what time did Dick Cheney go down to the underground bunker where he became in charge that morning? Did he go down at about 9:10 or 9:15, as almost everybody reports, or did he go down at almost 10 o'clock, 45 minutes later, after the Pentagon attack, as the 9/11 Commission report says? And that's just one of 25. And if the press had been doing its job, just revealing those contradictions, you wouldn't have to talk about contradictions of laws and physics in the Pentagon and the World Trade Center, just internal contradictions. But they won't report them. An open letter to Congress and the press, and not one mainstream newspaper, magazine, TV station, radio station has even mentioned the existence of a book that is reporting these contradictions in the official story. And they show you just how incompetent these guys were. It is, you know, people say, it couldn't have been an inside job. These guys were too incompetent. Exactly. They were horribly incompetent. It's just the press has covered up their incompetence. But I digress. My next book after this little book is about World Trade Center 7, the NIST report about it. It'll be called The Mysterious Collapse of Building 7, Why the Final Official 9/11 Report is Unscientific and False. And I show in the book that the NIST report about Building 7 confirms what the 9/11 movement has already said, always said about Building 7. It's the Achilles heel, because their report makes clear that a defense of the official theory, a coherent, rational defense, is simply impossible. First of all, they had to commit various kinds of scientific fraud in order even to get their theory, get what looked like a plausible theory. Scientific fraud mainly has three major categories. There's fabrication, falsification, and plagiarism. Now, plagiarism doesn't come into play here, because I don't want to be unkind, but I think nobody had said anything stupid enough that these guys wanted to copy. So we're only talking about the fabrication and falsification, but there's one kind of falsification that is extremely important, that is ignoring relevant evidence. NIST had to ignore so much relevant evidence, such as an abundant amount of melted steel in the rubble of the World Trade Center. Now, maybe technically melted iron, which is a byproduct of thermite. But the point is that an enormous amount of steel had melted. Likewise, the World Trade Center dust reveals the existence of an enormous quantity of particles that could have been formed only at extremely high temperatures. We're talking about 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. And fire, as you know, can, an open diffuse fire like this can at most get to 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, and the World Trade Center fires wouldn't have even been that hot. Even Thomas Eagar of MIT says they were probably only 1,300 degrees, 1,400 at the most. So how did things that took 5,000 degrees to melt them, how did they show up in the World Trade Center dust? And as Alphonse mentioned earlier, the dust even includes active thermitic material that appears to be unreacted nanothermite. Now, as many of you know, nanoscience, nanotechnology is the rage now. If you want to get a new building, you apply for a nanoscience or nanotechnology building. There's a vast amount of money for this really popular development. With regard to thermite is an incendiary. It starts fires. But nanothermite is a high explosive. So it is enormously more powerful than ordinary thermite. And so unreacted thermite, nanothermite, appears to be in the World Trade Center dust. And this is, as Alphon indicated, an extremely big story that is getting enormous amount of attention already in various parts of the world. Partly because the first author, the lead author, is Niels Harrit, a professor of chemistry at the University of Copenhagen, who is himself an expert in nanochemistry. When NIST was asked whether it had checked the dust for evidence of thermite, and here using thermite in the inclusive that would include nanothermite, it said no. When a reporter asked Michael Newman, a NIST spokesperson, why not, he said, because there was no evidence of that. This circular answer asked the reporter to ask, but how can you know there's no evidence if you don't look for it first? Newman said, if you're looking for something that isn't there, you're wasting your time and the taxpayers' money. I'm not making this stuff up. NIST also ignored and distorted testimonial evidence that explosions had gone off in Building 7. Now, many of those reports came late in the day, just before the building came down. But in some respects, the most important testimony was given by Barry Jennings of the New York City Housing Authority. As soon as the North Tower was struck that morning at 8:46, Jennings rushed, as he was supposed to do, to the 23rd floor of Building 7, which was where Mayor Giuliani had his Office of Emergency Management. He was accompanied by Michael Hess, who was the corporation counsel of the city of New York, and therefore Giuliani's lead attorney. And when they got there at 9 o'clock, they found everybody was gone. They'd skedaddled very quickly, still smoking coffee cups on the desks. So they phoned up, said, what should we do? They were told, you get out of there immediately. So they tried to go down the elevator wouldn't work. They started running down the stairs. But when they got down to the sixth floor, Jennings said there was a huge explosion that knocked the landing out from under us. We're just barely able to hold on. We pulled ourselves up. We went back up to the eighth floor. We broke the window, signaled for help. When I looked out the window, I saw the North Tower, the South Tower, both towers still standing. However, when Giuliani wrote a book about the next year and included a section about his friend Michael Hess's 9/11 experience, he said that what these men thought was an explosion was really just debris from this collapse of the North Tower. Now, that occurred at 10:28. What they were talking about occurred evidently by about 9:15. So we're talking about a difference of an hour and a quarter. How could that possibly be the same event? Nevertheless, this became the official story. It was defended by NIST in its 2005 report and again in its World Trade Center 7 report, and then supported by BBC Special in 2008. Jennings had told his story to the Loose Change producers. It was supposed to go in Loose Change Final Cut. But Jennings said, please don't put it in. It'll cost me my job. They left it out. But then a few months later, Jennings gave an interview to the BBC. But the BBC then distorted his testimony and made it appear like what he was talking about was much later. And so the all-knowing narrator could say what they thought was an explosion was just debris from a falling skyscraper. The BBC even made it seem like Jennings was all by himself, even though he kept saying, we went down the stairs and then we ran back up. They kept saying, Jennings, Jennings, as if he was all alone. This BBC show aired in July 2008. NIST, whose timeline the BBC had followed, released the first draft of its report the next month, in August. Shortly before this release, evidently only 2 days from what people have been able to figure out, Barry Jennings, who was 53 years old, died mysteriously. It has been impossible to get any information about it other than the statement that he died in a hospital. Whatever the cause of his death, it was certainly convenient. He was not around to be interviewed again, perhaps by Loose Change. And the BBC was able to put out a new version of its special on Building 7. And this time, Michael Hess participated and confirmed the truth of the BBC timeline, saying, oh yeah, this was just debris from the North Tower collapse. Michael Hess had in the meantime become a partner in Giuliani's business. To see the falsity of the official timeline, however, one only needs to look at the interview that Jennings gave to Loose Change, which you can now watch for yourself by going on the internet and looking for Barry Jennings Uncut. In any case, the death of Barry Jennings may well indicate just how threatening the truth about Building 7 is to the official conspiracy theory. I will point out one more way in which Building 7 has proved to be the Achilles heel. I mentioned earlier that it came down in virtual free fall. In the first draft of its report, NIST claimed that the collapse took far longer than a free fall collapse would have taken. It had a theory of progressive collapse and explained you'd still have stuff down there that would resist. You couldn't have zero resistance. But David Chandler, a high school physics teacher, put a demonstration on the web and showed that you could see easily that the building was coming down for over 2 seconds, not just in virtual free fall, in absolute free fall. Then he made a presentation to NIST at a public event that was broadcast. Somehow, evidently, they felt they had to admit freefall. So in the final report that came out in November, they admitted the building came down in absolute freefall for 2.25 seconds. But they didn't change their theory. The theory was still one that did not allow freefall. So they have an absolute contradiction between their theory and an admitted empirical fact. This contradiction can well be seen as the ultimate self-destruction of the official conspiracy theory about 9/11, which says that Muslim terrorists brought down 3 buildings of the World Trade Center by flying planes into 2 of them. I will conclude by addressing members of the 9/11 Truth Movement, both old members and any new members who may have been created tonight. I am an optimist. rather than letting up on our efforts to get the truth out about 9/11, now is the time to work even harder. For one thing, the cultural climate seems to have changed dramatically. When my first two books appeared, Publishers Weekly, which is the Bible for bookstores and libraries about what books are worth buying, they panned these books, ridiculed them as conspiracy theory. In 2008, November, the new Pearl Harbor Revisited was Pick of the Week by Publishers Weekly. Now, I say that not to brag, but that too. But I say it to stress the difference. Though back in 2004, 2005, it was not okay. A respectable organization couldn't name a book that says 9/11 is an inside job as a good book. But in 2008, that was possible. So it looks like a sea change has occurred in our culture. This can be a bellwether. Secondly, we have a new president in town, and he has pledged to base his administration's policies on good science and good intelligence. I suggest that part of the 9/11 truth movements now be aimed at the president to convince him that a new investigation is needed. He is a lawyer, a politician, and a religious man. So he may well be moved by learning that these types of people have formed 9/11 organizations urging him to authorize a new investigation. So besides carrying forward all our other activities, we should do everything we can to bring more scientists into the movement, to build up the size of lawyers for 9/11 truth, religious leaders for 9/11 truth, intelligence officers for 9/11 truth, and especially political leaders for 9/11 truth, because this is now what is most needed. Political pressure from political leaders around the world to authorize a new, truly independent investigation through which the truth about 9/11 can be revealed, and so that, and this is the important thing, so that policies based on the Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11 can all be reversed. Thank you very much for your attention.
Again, thanks to Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org, who not only serves up Media Monarchy and the Corbett Report and Ground Zero Lounge and Alan Watt, Wayne Madsen, Webster Tarpley, on and on and on and on. Actually, if you just subscribe to Glenn's feed on RadioForAll.net, that'll pretty much cover you for all your alternative radio news needs.